What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 84. I forgot to change that in the show notes. Episode 84. Have I succeeded? Apparently not. So recorded May 28th, 2014. This is a pretty cool episode. It was really just thrown together because I've been spent the last, well, obviously Monday we were off, and then yesterday I was editing all day, and so we just kind of took Dr. Yellen and Dr. Knobloch up on their offer to come back, and I really want to see what the students think of the year, since this is one of the last times they'll, actually, I think this is the last time you guys will do the podcast, so just get your thoughts on how we did in sports medicine, and then since we are kind of looking towards moving towards college credit, what Dr. Knobloch and Dr. Yellen think about what you guys have learned. So they're going to be quizzing you guys, so make sure you're ready. He could call on any one of you. Marlon, you two over there. Edith, you could be called on over there to answer questions. And if you don't know, then, I mean, you don't know. And we just know what we have to prepare for.
If you don't know, you'll be vaporized.
Vaporized. Got it? Okay, so you just heard Dr. Yellen, and you heard Dr. Yellen and Knobloch last week. And then the one that's going to release on Friday, it'll be them too. I didn't know if I told you that. I split it into two episodes.
Because we talked too much.
Because it went for a day and a half.
We'll just blame it on Bill. Bill talked
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, Bill.
So, yeah. So, but it was great because I got like a free episode out of you guys already being here. Yeah,
and
so
happy to help.
Of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. And with me today is...
George.
Marlon.
Edith.
Lorena.
Jocelyn.
Marissa.
Brianna.
And then you... I already heard from Dr. Yellen, Dr. Knobloch, you can see them there. I'm not sure what you can see in the camera. And then Laura's doing the show notes, so Laura and Edith, they're both doing show notes. So hopefully they'll catch all the answers that the students say. Real quick, we talked about the BOC certification last time. I looked into it, and I'm going to have to take the test again.
Oh, yeah.
So to do that, since it's been at least 10 years since I've done that, I'm going to need some study help. So anybody on Twitter that is... just recently taken or is about to take the BOC, then I could really use your old study materials. Just ship them directly to 206 South Shaver, Pasadena, Texas, courtesy of Jeremy Jackson, and then I'll just take those off your hands, or I might get with you guys and figure out what I need to do to really prepare.
So you're gonna do it.
I think so.
Good for you, man.
So it's awesome. It's like $100 application fee, and then you have to pay for the test.
$300 something.
Is it test $300 something?
Yeah. And, you know, now what's really interesting is that CADE, the Commission on Accreditation for Athletic Training Education, they have an accreditation standard now that says that, I think it's standard 11, 12, and 13, but it's, you know, athletic training programs need to have a 3-year aggregate of 70% first time pass rate or higher. So if you have 10 kids in your program, you need at least 7 of those to pass. And, you know, that 3-year aggregate or that 3-year average needs to be 70% or higher. So that mindset has really changed now from when we were probably going through school that, hey, look, you know, you went and you took it and you reported it. And now, you know, it's really on the onus of the schools and on the onus of those athletic training programs to prepare the students to adequately take and pass that exam. So the good for you that you're going to go and take it. And yeah. Everybody that's studying it for right now is under the, for that test right now is all under the same guidelines that you have to pass.
So again, I'm going to have to find out because I'm sure it's completely different. If I remember correctly, they don't have a physical part where I have to do the physical
correct.
Evaluation anymore.
All computerized
now. Yeah, it's gone to, so when we took it, it was a written sim and an oral practical or a practical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similar to how the Texas state exam is given, except the Texas state exam doesn't have a written simulation. It's a written and a practical. And then that kind of evolved into this hybrid. And that, I think that was like 2007 or 8 or something along those lines. And then now it's all computerized tests, just like you take your SAT or ACT or GRE or, you know, whatever it is, it's a computerized test. And what that has done is that, again, you talk about the onus, the responsibilities of the individual athletic training programs. You know, one of the bigger concerns when we moved to that model was how can we ensure that the students are doing these clinical skills the right way? And so now we have clinical integration proficiencies where you have, you know, certain guidelines that you need to be able to follow to make sure that the students are in fact performing these clinical proficiencies the correct way. And the onus again, or the responsibilities back on the program to make sure that, look, you're going to go out there. And the one thing that we always tell students is you are representing, you know, not only our program, not only our university and our department, but you're representing us as athletic trainers, and you're representing the entire profession. So when you have an athletic trainer that goes out and does a really good job, it benefits all of us. And when you have an athletic trainer that goes out and does something improperly, or does something to, you know, unfortunately hurt the general public, it, you know, it reflects on all of us. So, and I hope that the rest of the, you know, the rest of the athletic trainers, I think we're 41,000 now in strength. And so I hope that everybody else feels the same way. That, hey, look, when one of us does well, we all do well. When one of us does poorly, well, we all do poorly. So we got to make sure that we're constantly reinforcing, this is what athletic training is. This is what we're about. This is how we go about it. These are the educational competencies and the clinical proficiencies. And this is what it means to be successful, and this is why it's so important. Yeah. So good luck, man. Kill it.
Thanks. I might have to, again, I might have to get with you guys and do some study sessions or something.
Yeah.
So, but I'm sure they have that stuff on the BOC.
Yeah, and the other thing you need to realize, too, is that the Board of Certification, they put out a role delineation study and practice analysis. Okay, and so the Board of Certification puts that out. Then the NATA responds with the educational competencies. So the role delineation study and practice analysis is different now than it was when you took the boards. And so, for instance, if you look at the scope of practice for athletic training now, we have 5 practice domains. We used to have 6, but now we have 5. And that's as a result of the role delineation study and practice analysis. And that's at the 6th edition now. And so the NATA puts out their educational competencies, which we're at the 5th edition now. And so that role delineation study practice analysis is really the blueprint for the BOC exam. So my suggestion to you is you can go to www.bocatc.org and look up the role delineation study practice analysis and look over all the different things that they have now. And then go look up the 5th edition educational competencies that can be found either on the KD website or on the NATA website. And look over all the different competencies now. Like one of the bigger things, and luckily we've got Dr. Knobloch, but one of the bigger competencies now, a whole new section, evidence-based practice. We have to be able to teach it. So we have a class for the MAT program called Research in Athletic Training, where Dr. Knobloch is going to be teaching the evidence-based practice principles. So a lot's changed. And it's good.
Yeah.
It's all really good.
Yeah. I remember when I took it, I had the... had to use the yellow highlighter.
the latent image pen.
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
That was the first test I took, and I got so nervous that they gave you 2 books at the time. One was the questions, and one was basically a blank book that you marked with the pen. I got so nervous that I took my pen and marked through the answer on the wrong book, and I didn't see any, I just went right over the words. I'm like, oh no, something's supposed to show up. What do I do? And I panicked and ended up 10 seconds later realizing, okay, I'm supposed to use this book, but. So I remember that latent image pen very well.
Yeah, it's kind of like magic ink. I don't know if that's the best way to describe it, but like it's a blank piece of paper, and then you'd go over it with this highlighter, and then the words would show up.
They have no idea. They don't have a clue. They don't. What? What do you mean writing? No.
And I had to tell you my story on when I took my board certification test, and Dr. Yellen is now a witness to this, but took it the first time in 1996. And most of you kids
hang on. Did you just hear this? I took it for the first time in 1996. And George over there was like, dude, what? George, were you even born yet? No, I'm
talking about the paper. The one that you write over.
He's changing his story now. He's trying to act.
Yeah, my dad's a truck driver.
But wait, were you born in 96?
I was born in
98. Yeah. Okay.
Whatever.
But I took it and I passed the practical and the written sim pretty well, and I missed the written by 2. Mm-hmm. I got 104 and needed 106. So I kind of got complacent and I said, you know what, I know what I probably missed. I know exactly what I did. Just studied these sections and worked on some other topics pretty well. And I took it again in June. Took it in June, thought I did great. Go home to my apartment, and back then you knew if you passed when you saw the envelope. If you get a thin envelope, all it had was a certification or a slip of paper says congratulations, you passed. If you had a thick envelope, you had all the retake paperwork. I get there and I pull it out, and the first thing I see is this thick envelope. I'm just devastated. I open it up, missed it by 1. Got 105, I had 106. Got 105, needed 106. Devastated. I had to wait through football season because back then they would have a delay from August until... I took it first time in June, the second time right again in August. No problem. Failed it in the August test. Had to wait all the way till November. And just... So I missed it by two. Got complacent. Missed it by one. Took it in November and did really well on it. So... I would tell people, don't ever get complacent. If you barely missed it, study harder than you think you need to. I just kind of said, well, you know, I'll take it again. I only need 2 points. No big deal. Gained 1 point. Still missed it by 1 point the second time. So took me 3 times. But
and it used to be that, you know, if you missed one part of that exam, you go back and retake that part. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Yep.
So if you don't, you know, if you don't make the correct score the first time, you're going to retake the entire test. And so, you know, it's, and again, the onus is back on the program. So we need a 70% first time pass rate, 3-year aggregate. So we want to, you know, as educators, and what I said last time was that athletic training educators make up less than 1% of the entire athletic training profession. And so that less than 1% is responsible for the other 99%+. And we got to make sure that we're doing it the right way, because we're responsible for putting these clinicians out in the world and making sure that they're ready to, you know, get their feet wet and move forward, hopefully, you know, in a very successful profession.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. It was kind of a hope you catch something whenever I was at HBU. And, you know, it's changed, and I'm sure a large part of that was me. It's kind of like you don't really understand what you need to be getting or what you're getting. Like right now, even sitting right here, Brianna's playing with her hair or fingernails or something, and they don't know the benefit of what this could potentially have in, you know, professional communication skills, or maybe they decide they want to be an athletic trainer and they want to get a master's, and they go to meet you guys and it's like, I remember you falling asleep last time we were there. Or,
I'm not going to mention any names, Brianna.
So, like, just the importance of each of your actions. And you know, that's just, it is what it is. I wish I'd kept it, but so now I'm going to have to work hard and go from there. So we were discussing that before you guys came in.
You're going to be smarter for it because you have to relearn all that stuff you hadn't used in years, and you're going to come out of it much broader knowledge base than you have gained at this point, because you have to go back and relearn so much more that you kind of let trail off when you had it because you didn't use it. So,
well, there's this principle in teaching, right? In education, you learn it, you learn it once, you teach it, you learn it twice. Because you learn it, okay, well, you know, essentially you're an observer when you're learning.
Right.
Right? And when you teach it, you have to be able to communicate your knowledge and put it in a package where everybody can understand it. And so as you start to dissect these different variables, you begin to understand, okay, well, if I say this, is everybody in the room going to understand it? And how do I create, you know, this environment where everybody in the room can learn? Because all the students are different learners. They have different learning styles, right? Three main types are, you know, verbal, auditory, and kinesthetic. Most people that go into athletic training are mostly kinesthetic, and then there's some sort of verbal or you know, auditory type component. But this is not why we can't. This is not our conversation for today.
All right, so that's actually a great question. And we have these four questions that we actually went over yesterday with the students. Oh, and what? One of the least favorite things that Jocelyn said is that we had to do things more than once. Why did you say that your least favorite thing was because you said we have to do things over and over or do things more than once. That was on your paper. And so I just wanted to understand what you meant by that.
So we have more time to learn new things instead of doing the same thing that we already know. Like,
so I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, right? We learned it. Why do we have to keep on going back and relearning it?
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a couple different analogies. You ever seen a basketball game?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that basketball player is up there at the free throw line, right? Mm-hmm. And under a really strenuous condition, this basketball player has to shoot and put the basketball into the hoop, right?
Yeah.
And when they practiced, maybe they practiced one or two times, but they haven't practiced in a game situation. They haven't practiced with all these fans screaming around them. They haven't practiced with all the pressure. So what do you think alleviates some of that stress? What do you think makes that person more successful in that particular situation?
Practice.
Yeah. Repetitive practice. And so you guys have always heard, right? practice makes perfect. That's not true. Perfect practice makes perfect. You can practice the wrong thing till you're blue in the face, and you're awesome at the wrong thing. So perfect practice makes perfect. And so it's a really basic educational principle that we're going to learn how to do this particular skill, and we're going to constantly practice. So for instance, in the athletic training world, right? Let's say you have a first aid class, and emergency medicine class. And I'll give you a real life, for instance. When I was at another university in Louisiana, I taught emergency medicine for athletic training. And I would constantly drill these skills in to students over and over and over and over and over again. And constantly over and over. And they would say the same thing. Oh my God, here we go again. Well, what ends up happening is that when they get out to a real life situation, and God forbid something really bad happens, where there's a cervical spine injury or somebody dies, all of a sudden those skills become ingrained in their ability to perform. And so they're able to jump into action without even thinking about it. Just like that free throw shooter, right?
Yeah.
That free throw shooter has practiced over and over and over again and literally probably close their eyes and make that shot. Same thing. So you practice and you practice and you practice and you practice and you practice.
I can give you an example. How many of you in here are CPR certified? How many of you have taken
it? All of them. They're all CPR certified.
How many of you feel like you could do it right now if somebody went unconscious? So we went from what, 10 to 3?
No, I don't think any of them raised their
hands. These two.
Oh, you guys feel if somebody died, you can jump right in and do it.
Because you've done it. But I'll give you an example that happened to me. I was in college, my senior year of college, and I was part of one of our classes we could take was to become EMT certified. One of my rotations was in the ER, and they brought a very old individual in, and he was code blue. He was just not functioning at all. No heartbeat, anything. And I had taken CPR from, my freshman year of high school through that year, which would have been probably 8-9 times I've taken. And everybody knew at the time, back then it was 15-2 compressions. So I was standing there, and I, you know, in my mind, I knew it, didn't care if they might have asked me, but they said, well, here's an EMT student, have him do CPR in this very, I think he was 92 or 93 years old. And I panicked because it was the first time I'd ever done it, even though I had done it so many times. So what I did was I remembered my hand position. I remembered the compression ratio, what it was in my mind. But as soon as I started, all that went away. And I was just doing compressions, just constant. And they were trying to bag valve this guy with the bag valve over his mouth. And while they're doing that to make his chest expand, I'm sitting there doing compressions on it. And what I'm getting at is, for you, that why do we do it over and over? Because when you're in this situation, all of you, I guarantee you, have practiced. Let me ask you, give me an example of something you think you have done once and then you had to repeat it. Just one example of something.
Like something in class that we've repeated?
Something that she would say that why are we repeating it?
I have a question for you. Do you drive a car?
No.
You don't drive a car? Mm-mm. Does anybody else in here drive a car?
George.
Did you have to practice? Or you just got behind the wheel one time and said, yep, I'm good to go?
Nope. I had to practice like for 2 years.
Oh. Oh, okay.
But it still didn't go
repetitive,
good.
Right? Instinctual responses. I'm sorry. Dr. Noblock, continue.
So what would you just give me an example of a scenario or a something you had to that you thought maybe once was enough. Can you think of anything?
Nope.
You just threw the question out. Well, what I'm getting at is, for example, free throws. And I've worked basketball many years, and I always remember, what do most basketball coaches have in practice free throws? Either at the beginning of practice, they sit there and they shoot 100 free throws, or at the end, the coaches probably leave and they have the basketball players shoot free throws, just repetitive in the same situation. Well, think about the environment they're in. They're in a very controlled environment. It's quiet. They're probably joking with their friends. Well, when does a free throw really become important? When does that ability to make a free throw probably become the most important of any other time? At the end of a game, right?
Yep.
Well, what's the scenario at the end of the game? You're probably tired. You're sweaty. There's pressure.
Noise everywhere.
There's what?
Noise everywhere.
There's noise everywhere. Right. There's pressure on you. And you have to make one free throw. A coach I heard one time said they dare you to do it. They fouled you because they know you're not going to do it. All this pressure's on them. But they don't practice that situation. And so when you say, yes, I'm doing it in a classroom and I did it once, That's great, but that's the most perfect scenario you could be in to learn something. Because when you're on the athletic training field or you're driving a car and somebody cuts in front of you, I guarantee you didn't practice that in driver's ed. You have to remember what are the basic fundamentals you learned. And the best way to get those fundamentals built into you is you repeat it. And believe me, there are many times that many scenarios I can think of is, why am I doing this again? Why am I doing this again? And I mean, if you think about CPR as an example, you have an athlete, you turn the corner and there's somebody laying there on the floor. What are you going to do? When you're in Jeremy's position, everybody looks at you. When you're a student, you can say, oh, go get the athletic trainer or go call 911 or, you know, call 911 or get school administrators. But what about when that person is you that they're calling? Do you have the fundamentals to know what to do in that case? There's certain things you can do, but most people, when they're in a situation of learning it, they're in this very controlled environment. And when you do it once, you're not going to remember anything. You know, and I remember it many times in high school. I was bored. This isn't exciting. I don't care. I'm going to do it just to get the passing point that I got all the checkoffs. But there's other things I thought was so cool, like head injury evaluations. I thought was cool, and I wanted to do more and more. But you have to look at them all the same and just know that that is the chance to learn it and do it again and do it again and do it again. Because when you're in a real-world environment, there is no way it's going to be that calm and quiet. If you know, go back to unconscious athlete, you've got parents panicking, screaming around you. Are you going to have the mental capacity right there to say, I know exactly what I'm doing? You're going to calm them. Did you call 911? Did you do all this? And that comes from the repetition. But I do understand your frustration from one side of it is, well, I already did this. Why am I doing it again? But I'm pretty sure that what you're doing repeatedly are things that you really need to know. You know, things like making ice, you know, we can all make ice bags. We know how to do that. But hopefully you'll do that enough anyway. But there's certain skills that when you do them over and over and over, it seems boring, but you're building some memory in your mind. So when you're in a pressure situation, you can at least recall enough to not cause harm and hopefully get this individual to a better state of care, hopefully. So, but long-winded answer to your question that you didn't even give me a good example of what you can think of, because I was going to turn it into a real-world situation. I was going to put the pressure on you.
Well, I mean, just some of the things that we practice over and over. We do CPR, I would say, at least once every 2 weeks, where we do CPR or conscious choking. And actually, Edith, I read your paper, and you did conscious choking on your cousin or brother or something like that?
We were in the living room, and he picked up a quarter, and he put it in his mouth. And he started to choke, so I did the choking CPR one.
So was it when you did that? Was everybody kind of sitting there just looking around, or what was the environment
was
like?
Was everybody panicked?
Yeah, screaming.
Were you screaming and you were panicked and I mean, it was a little different than learning it in class, right?
Yeah.
Or than doing it in class, and so you had the fundamentals probably from doing it repeatedly, so you could at least relate to how it's different when it's a real world situation versus when you're learning it in a very quiet environment.
Yeah.
Congratulations, by the way.
Well done. You know, statistically, from a CPR standpoint, if you do CPR on 10 people, you personally know 7 of those people. So if there are 10 people in this room, which I think there are, that means 7 of those people are a family or a friend of mine. And so the knowledge of you having CPR is incredibly, incredibly important. And I hate to, you know, obviously death and dying is a very serious situation. However, what you guys have just learned in CPR is the worst thing that happens, and this is something that I always taught, what's the worst thing that happens? The patient dies. That's the easiest thing to treat, right? It is. I don't want to take away the seriousness of death and dying. But the worst thing is the easiest thing to treat. Start CPR. Go get the AED. Call 911. Right? And all of you know how to do that. And so that's a real skill that you all need to keep up. And it's something that can really save lives. And I applaud all of you for making sure that you know how to do that.
Brianna actually did it as well for her, was it cousin, brother? And so she did the conscious choking. So kind of same deal.
I've done it for both my kids. Couple times, and then I've done CPR 5 times, and I'm what you call 3 out of 5. So the 5 times that I've done it, 3 have lived and 2 have not. And so those are really tough situations to be in. But yeah, you practice and you you have your skills that you've been trained with, and you're confident in your skills, and you start. Sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't.
All right, so let's go to favorite things about the sports medicine course. So who do y'all want to pick on first?
I want to pick on Brianna, since you fell asleep last time.
Favorite thing about the sports medicine
course?
What's
your favorite thing? And I'm going to ask you some questions.
I like the Superfood Fridays.
I'm sorry, back up. The Superfood... No, not literally back up.
She's right. She's listening.
Yeah. Hold on. Okay. What the Superfood Fridays. Yeah. And so you learned about nutrition. You learned about superfoods. And what are some of these superfoods that you've learned about?
Like
Pray
the,
tell.
The healthy breakfast.
What's an example of a healthy breakfast?
Whole grain and the pancakes. And one time Jackson brought in some granola. It was like crumbled up granola thing.
Yeah, you liked it. And so let me ask you guys a question around the table. How many of you, after learning about Superfood Fridays, how many of you eat breakfast before you go to school?
Every day.
I eat breakfast every day. So why is breakfast so important? I'm sure Jeremy has talked about this to you guys, right?
Yeah, we talked about it. And we talked to Brett Singer, who's a registered dietitian for Memorial Hermann. He talked about it.
Yeah, and so what ends up happening is that gastric emptying time is 3 hours, right? So think of your body like a gas tank. And instead of gallons, right, like in a car we look at, you know, how many miles per gallon do we get, your body operates off of hours. So your body can operate off about 3 hours at a time. And so what that means is about every 3 hours, you need to be able to put something in your body that's composed of a carbohydrate, a protein, and a fat. And it takes about 45 minutes for that carbohydrate to get out of your body. And it takes about 3 hours for a protein or fat to get out of your body. So now let's say, just, you know, hypothetically, that you went to sleep at 9 o'clock at night. And you woke up at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, you've been sleeping for 12 hours, which means that 4 of those 3 hour cycles have passed. And now let's say you decide not to eat breakfast and you don't eat until noon. So now you've gone 5 of those 3 hour cycles. What happens to your body if you don't have enough fuel? It starts to slow down. It starts to break down, just like a car, right? If your gas tank is empty in a car and you don't put fuel in, what happens?
Breaks down.
Yeah, you're stalled out on the, you know, on the 225 freeway.
We can tell you're from California. We don't say the 225. We just say 225. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
On the 405.
You know what's funny is that you're like the second or third person that's told me that. I could tell you're not from here. Why? Because you say the 45 or the 225. No, we just say. And then when I was in Louisiana, I would call them all freeways. And they're like, what's a freeway? It's a highway. So when I came here, I'm like, look, I was on the 45 highway. And they're like, no, it's a freeway. Of course it is. So that's how important breakfast is, right? That's how important meals are. And so remember, for a carbohydrate, about 45 minutes of fuel, protein and a fat, about 3 hours of fuel. So a granola, right? It's got protein, fat, and carbohydrate. You get 3 hours of fuel out of that. So think of it that way. And your brain and your muscles, they all need that. Like, for instance, I bet Marissa did not eat breakfast. And how I know that is that was a really big yawn. Her metabolism is slowed down. And her brain is, you know, needs some oxygen. So you yawn because your brain is telling you, I need more oxygen because I'm slowing down. So in comes this big, like you just did.
You right? know, there are other alternate possibilities of why that yawn happened. Maybe we're really boring. It's a possibility.
Maybe you guys are horrible.
I don't think it's true, but it is possible.
Well, you know, I think I'm awesome. Just ask me. I'll tell you. So. All right, okay. So I got your attention now. For 1,000 free points, who can tell me the exact definition of a certified athletic trainer?
Not it.
He's exempt. He gets a pass.
So if I look up on the NATA website or the BOC. Or the American Medical Association, or the Master of Athletic Training Program at www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT.
See why you repeat things? You never know when you're going to forget it.
Yeah. What's the exact definition of an athletic trainer? Have you guys learned that?
or reasonably close.
No, not reasonably close. I want the exact.
It has to be word for word, though.
Word for word. Yeah, because when people ask, right?
George,
people,
aren't you cheating?
And when they say, yeah. George. Yeah, and when they say, you know, and this is a real question, right? Because people ask, they ask me all the time, what do you do for work? And I tell them, I'm an athletic trainer, and I'm the director of the Master of Athletic Training Program. Oh, what's an athletic trainer? And so what's the definition that you're going to give them?
A highly trained.
So athletic trainers are healthcare professionals that collaborate with physicians and specialize in areas like prevention, emergency care, clinical diagnosis, therapeutic interventions, and rehabilitation of injuries and illnesses. And athletic trainers are recognized by the American Medical Association in 1990 as a healthcare profession. George, does that coincide with what you were cheating? What did I miss?
I didn't look for it because you answered it.
Oh, yeah. So it was perfect. So when people ask you, well, what are you guys doing in high school? I'm in this athletic training course. Oh, what's athletic training? You need to know what that is, right? And every time you stand up for the profession, you stand up for everybody. Okay.
So I'll have to add that to my daily thing.
Right, the count is three now.
Yeah, I know. One more, and I have this little lever here that you're gone.
Ejection chair. That's what I need.
All right. Somebody else, what's your favorite about the sports medicine class?
Who are you going to call on? Lorena's hiding back there, so you can't see her, so call on her.
Lorena?
Yes.
What's your favorite?
Yes.
You're correct.
Present.
That's correct.
Yes, here.
That's my name.
This is the very casual sports medicine broadcast, yeah. For sure.
Lorena.
Oh, what happened?
Lorena, what's your favorite part about the sports medicine class?
Or what is your least favorite part, if that's easier to answer?
Or do you know that you're in a sports medicine class?
Yes, I know that.
Okay. What's your favorite?
You wrote it down yesterday.
Learning about the bones and muscles.
Oh. How many bones in the body?
within 10.
Have we done that?
How many bones in the body?
I'm sure I've said it. I don't know if I've quizzed them on it. Jocelyn, do you know?
I don't know. Is it like between 100 and 130?
No.
No.
It's
206.
And it's not between 0 and 1,000. You can't say that either.
No, I wasn't going to say that.
206 plus or minus 3.
Huh?
It's 206.
Plus or minus 3. Do you know where this plus or minus 3 comes from?
Because you break 3 and then you'll get more.
No, it's a good question. It's a good try. Well done. But when you break it, it re-heals into the same bone. There is a reason there's
Yeah,
there's
you have
three.
A couple different sesamoid bones, and you have a couple other bones in your ear that somebody may have one or two more. And every once in a while, somebody develops an extra sesamoid bone, and anybody listening to this broadcast. And that sesamoid bone is behind the femur, the femoral condyle, and it's called a fabella, F-A-B-E-L-L-A. And that sesamoid bone occurs because there's too much friction between the gastrocnemius and the femoral condyle. So that could be one, right? Somebody could have an extra sesamoid bone in the great toe or extra otolith in the ear or something along those lines. So 206 plus or minus 3. How many muscles in the body? George.
Cheater.
Look at George.
He's trying, though. He's trying.
Laura, take a guess. How many muscles?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
She's actually listening to the live stream.
Oh, cool.
So she's a little behind us.
Uh-huh.
So, Laura, what do you think? How many muscles are in the body? Take a guess.
No, that's incorrect.
George is trying to help you out here.
Look, 7. He's saying 7. 700. 70,000. I don't. How many muscles?
I think you just said 7,000. 7.
Yeah,
7,000.
7. 70,000. I'll take 70,000, Bob. For nope.
George is trying really hard to cheat here.
700. Oh, what do you think, Dr. Nelbo?
I thought it was 540 some.
I thought it was like 600.
Well, you asked
the
bad question.
I think it's 640, but
I think it's like 600.
I think I got my answer from Wikipedia.
The person asked the question doesn't know. That's
so.
Really bad.
Well, I mean, it all depends on what theory you're following, Dr. Knobloch. I mean, if you're following the theory of ontogeny, recapitulating phylogeny.
There you go.
Well, then, you know.
Depends on which researcher you believe.
And if there's the lateral ligament of the knee and.
Yeah, if there's that. Found
actually,
it, yeah.
What's really cool is I'm one of those, I can't remember the name of the muscle. It's in Hoppenfeld's book. They talk
Paul
about
Morris
it.
Paul Morris longus.
I have one in one arm and one in, not in the other.
I mean, you can't remember. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, you see? It's there.
You have
it's phasing out, supposedly.
You have a Paul Morris longus in your right hand and not one in your left, which means that he may or may not have a plantaris, which is right, just what I guess it would be deep to the gastrocnemius, or what we like to call the triceps surae.
Careful, the yawns are going to start.
Yeah, so. Here we go. I mean, I think about this all the time. Okay. I walk around.
Next question. Somebody likes the bones and muscles. George, what is your...
Present.
In five words or less, what is your favorite thing about the sports medicine course? One? Now, do you see why repetitions help? See, we put him under pressure just of asking the question, and he's a little nervous. So think about when you're in an injury situation. This is I hate to pick on George as a learning experience, but when somebody calls on you, think about when there's
people
two.
There's two ums.
You have three words left to explain your least favorite part of the sports medicine course.
The least.
Well, there's four.
You got one.
You got one more, boss.
One more.
Well, at first you said what's your favorite, and then you switched it on him. So,
but he went from five. Now he's at to three words, and now he said the least, so he's at one.
He
word.
Said the least. So you're down to one.
Broadcast.
Oh, that's your least favorite. Part, that's
no. He said he's saying that's his
that's
favorite.
That's your most favorite.
That is your favorite. Okay.
Yeah, I had one word left, so.
So why is it your favorite? You have no limit.
Could you imagine? Now. Wait. This would be awesome. George is an athletic trainer. His favorite part is broadcast. And so, like, somebody is hurt, but now he's like an ESPN announcer.
It's because, like, we learn so much.
George,
things.
What's wrong? Well, Bob, I'm going to tell you.
So why is it your favorite? I can guess, but why in your opinion, why is it your favorite?
So we've talked to nutritionists. We've talked to other athletic trainers. We've talked to the guy from Chick-fil-A.
And the pregnant lady.
We've talked to
the pregnant lady.
The pregnant lady that exercises.
I know what you're getting at, but why is that neat? Why? What is it about that that's really neat for you?
Because we learn things.
Because, like, I don't know, I like learning things.
Because you're learning from experts in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the smartest person about pregnancy and fitness is a fitness expert that's pregnant. And who, you know, and... I think that's really neat is that you guys get to bring in experts. I mean, you can ask somebody, everybody in here has some experience in something, but they can tell a little bit, oh, I drove a car. I've never had a wreck, but I can tell you what it's probably like, probably. For example, you're the only one that's driven the car. Hopefully you haven't had a wreck yet, but
I have.
Okay. I'll switch topics, but this is an opportunity for you guys to learn from experts. So you can ask them questions and they will give you answers that are very factual because that's their area. So it's better than it was very nice of Jeremy to bring us back because you have to listen to us again maybe or punish you with listening to us again. But when they bring in different individuals, a concussion expert, a nutritionist, you get to ask them very pointed direct questions that you have and they will give you expert answers. So I'm glad to hear that this is a very positive experience for you.
So believe it or not, Edith and Brianna are both more of an expert in performing life-saving
yes.
skills than I am. I have never once actually performed the Heimlich or the CPR or any of that, never once. So I'm not asking to change that. Nobody go ahead and
tell it, Brianna?
Her.
Brianna and Edith.
Her. Edith, you were the one that had the very loud environment, right? It wasn't quiet and learned. So you can give examples when somebody says, oh, well, you know, I'll remember this. Well, you probably didn't because everybody's screaming around. You probably had to really think about it. And that's an example of an expert. That's somebody that's done it in a real world environment. And it's not the nice setting that you have when you're learning it in CPR class. So
I used to do something really, I thought it was a great technique, but when I was teaching the emergency medicine classes, I would prepare the students and we'd rehearse and practice, right? And then when it came to exam time, I'd walk in with a bullhorn or an air horn or something along those lines, and they'd be performing these life-saving skills, and then I'd start all these distractions. And they'd say, what are you doing? I said, what do you think is really going to happen? You'd have people crying and screaming in your ear. And if you're a athletic trainer in a traditional setting like sports, people, you know, coaches are going to be over your shoulder. And if you're one of those athletic trainers that's part of a big college or pros, you know, the entire country's watching you do this. And you better know what it is that you're doing.
You've all seen what happens on Twitter when somebody posts something, it gets retweeted. Well, think about when you're on TV and the professionals and they're doing something and they mess up. Or when you see an athletic trainer on TV doing something. I remember, for example, there was an athletic trainer that was not using gloves on somebody. Went back in the big heyday of you have to put gloves on. If they even possibility of blood. And there wasn't social media back then. It was just one of those things, you know, it just, you saw it. Everybody probably discussed it with whoever they're sitting by. But now, if you do something wrong, it's discussed immediately. If you even say something wrong, I mean, in this broadcast, somebody could easily retweet, I don't agree with what he said. And you're living in this environment, in this day and age of social media. You guys are really need to know your stuff, whatever profession you go into. Because if you screw up, it gets in the news. It gets discussed in your profession. Did you hear about what so-and-so did? I can't believe they did that or they said that. So, again, it goes really knowing your area as well.
All right, somebody else. What other thing, what's your favorite thing that you've learned in the sports medicine?
You have to call on somebody. This is Marlon, Edith, Marlon, Lorena, Justin, Marlon, Marissa.
Yeah. Bright red-faced Marlon. What was your favorite thing that you learned in the sports medicine class?
I think my favorite was learning, like, the skeleton, like, your bones and everything.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about that? You just like learning it?
Yeah.
Knowing where things are?
Yeah.
And how they work and how they move? Okay. Somebody else. You know, and that's a great thing about athletic training, right? You probably really loved anatomy. And whenever I ask people, why do you want to go into athletic training? You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's because I really like sports. And, you know, I'll tell them, quite frankly, go be a coach. Go, you know, go be a sports journalist. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, there's quite a few athletic trainers that don't go into the athletic setting anymore. Like the last time we talked, there are athletic trainers at Disney and at NASA and every branch of the military and these major, you know, Fortune 500 companies, and they're there to prevent injuries. And that's really where athletic training is expanding to, and they're doing things like physician extender. So when I ask people, why do you want to be an athletic trainer? It's because they love anatomy and they like to know how the body works and they want to know what to do when it's broken and how to fix it. And they want to be part of an active population and they want to feel like they can make a difference. And those are all really great reasons to go into a profession like athletic training.
All right, so real quick, one of the ways that we continued to practice the bones was I would have them stand up, face a partner, you know, all right, so touch your patella to your partner's femur, mm-hmm. You know, so we'd randomly call out two different bones and they'd have to do that. Do you think that helped you doing it that way, or was it the coloring, or where we traced the skeleton and y'all drew it? What do you think helped you learn the skeleton the most?
Sounds like an anatomy twister.
The... When call to bones and touch
the part. So everything you just said.
So you're actually physically moving.
Yeah.
All right. So he was talking about kinesthetic learning earlier. So you're up and moving and interacting, you know, and you're kind of put on the spot. There's a little bit of pressure, but I really enjoy doing that because it gets you guys up and moving. And we've talked to Dr. Geyer about, you know, not sitting for very long. And then it also helps people that like to move more to learn. And it's fun, I think.
Yeah,
I usually seem to have fun doing that.
If you really really want to play a trick on them, touch your sphenoid to your hyoid.
What?
What?
What? It's a bone inside of your skull.
Oh.
Yeah.
And actually, the reason I should know this because, you know, it's my job, but the reason I know that where the sphenoid is because, like, last week I looked up bones because a lot of the nights when I'm putting Jonah to sleep, he'll say, Daddy, can you tell me my bones? So, you know, I'll do phalanges awesome. And, you know, I'll go through all the foot and up. And so he's like, are there any more bones? He's like, yes, but I can't remember them. So yeah. Then I go and look them up and find other bones.
Daddy's tired. I need to go.
Is that like, how do you know you're an athletic trainer?
When you
sing the bones to your child to put him to sleep?
Yeah. Is that how it works? It's not just the Miley Cyrus or the bone song, but your hip bone kicks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We didn't get into real detail, like the anterior tail of fibula ligamentous.
Actually, yeah. I do. I'm not joking.
That's a good idea.
I can do the muscles. I do the bone. So, yes.
You're going to have the smartest kid in the world.
I know, right? He's going to be walking around orthopedic surgeon at age 6, you know?
Awesome. Awesome. Little Doogie Howser.
Yeah, why not?
All right, so where were we?
The least.
Yeah, what's your least favorite thing?
Let's ask Marissa. I think Marissa.
Marissa. We'll call her Big Young Marissa.
I don't think I have a least favorite.
That's a good answer. I don't want Mr. Jackson to fail me, so I don't know.
So all your favorites are exactly the same? There's none that's one a little least, little less favorite than the rest of them?
I like that. I don't like that we're sitting down. I like to be like up and moving.
Up and moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the greatest things about athletic training is that rarely are you doing the same thing over and over and over again. You're going to wear all these different hats, right? And so your aunts, you know, that word always really took a while to get out of my face there. You're always doing something different. So, and Dr. Knobloch can talk about this. Dr. Knobloch, like I said before, Dr. Knobloch was a head athletic trainer for Lamar University for 7 or 8 years. And then he went back and got his PhD, and now he's on, you know, the other side of athletic training education. So he can really talk about, as the head athletic trainer, you'd come in and, you know, you'd see different patients from different sports, and you'd have different administrative duties, and then he'd also teach a class there, and he was always doing something different. You never knew what you're going to get. So it's always exciting.
George, what's your least favorite?
We'll give you 10 words this time.
From the class or from athletic training?
From the class, I from think the class.
Topic. It's okay. The only way I get better is by talking to you guys.
You're afraid
if
to
I
say
was,
it.
If I was afraid to get feedback, I wouldn't ask you for it.
Wait, Jackson, you have to take off your headphones and close your ears.
It's okay, because I have to edit the podcast.
Yeah, what do you guys call him? You call him Mr. Jackson? You call him Jackson?
Jackson.
You just call him Jackson. Jackson,
yeah. Here, let me look up George's paper.
George,
here.
That doesn't excuse you.
Yeah.
You're still on the clock.
It was a personal embarrassing moment where George fell out of a chair.
Oh,
had you fallen asleep?
In class?
Did you fall asleep in class? And then that was always my favorite, you know, as an instructor. To watch students fall asleep, and then all of a sudden, you know, they have that kind of, I don't know, like maybe they're falling out of a plane or whatever it was, and they're in the middle of class, and down they go.
I did that during the STAR test.
Like, you fell asleep during the STAR test?
Yeah, I was like that, and I just woke up and like, I twitched.
And down you went.
So is there anything you wish you could learn more in the class? I'll give George a reprieve since he told an embarrassing story, but is there anything you wish you could do that you don't do?
Something about skin, like cuts and stuff.
You want to do wound care.
Yeah.
So the bad thing about wound care is it's tough to practice. Yes, you can draw a red line on your skin and say this is a cut, but what's really interesting, you know, you really have to see, and I've seen some really, I mean, it was exciting when I was a student. I saw, when I was in grad school, it was two kids playing, and one of them tripped and his leg went through a plate glass window and the front of his shin was just split. I mean, wide open. And this is something I want to get across to you guys. If you're going into athletic training, let me back up one step. There's a video. How many of you watch Tosh.0? Anybody watch Tosh.0? You remember this video of this kid? It was an indoor gymnasium kind of thing. And the kid was bouncing on a trampoline real high and he made a wrong move and he fell down and the ankle dislocated. Oh, yeah. What you noticed was there was about 10 kids in there. Do you remember what the kids did when that happened? You may not remember, but they just ran every different direction. They ran away from this kid. And so this kid's on the trampoline with his ankle dislocated. And what I want you to understand, and this, it was like me that day when I saw that, is when you see this stuff, if it's not exciting to you, and if you're not, I don't mean, you know, I want to see this as much as possible. If you don't go to that as a learning opportunity and a chance to see this and learn from it, yes, it's gross, but to me it was cool, and hopefully to you that want to be athletic trainers, it's cool, because believe me, when you're a licensed or certified athletic trainer, and somebody gets hurt, a severe wound injury, and if you go, oh, that's gross, get away from me, you can't do that. There's no option. You have to be the person that takes care of them. Think of it as if that was your brother or your sister. Do you want somebody saying, ooh, yuck, or do you want to say, hey, I want to help you? So wound care is really cool. Sometimes it's really disgusting too. I mean, there's skin infections that happen. And if you've seen MRSA, for example, it's not pretty, or a spider bite. I mean, those are things that are going to come. People are going to come to you and say, something's wrong with my arm. There's a big, big boil on it.
We were actually talking about that in biology yesterday. Right, Lorena?
Have you guys learned about the system? So like, do you know what system the skin is under?
No.
Skin, hair, teeth, and nails?
Should have learned that in biology. It
starts with an I.
I knew that.
You knew that it started
with
an I.
Afterwards.
Yes, I starts a, with an
a,
I-N.
What's the second letter?
Not immune.
INT.
INT. What? Say it again.
Integumentary.
Correct.
Good job, Laura.
Yeah. 1,000 free points. Good job.
But it's interesting to hear you want to learn about wound care, because if you can handle that, then you're in good shape. Because that's probably I don't say the goriest. I mean, you could always see a compound fracture with the bone sticking out. That's really gory. But I mean,
because my sister, she fell off the monkey bars one day and she broke her
wrist.
I think
wrist?
It was the radius. Mm-hmm. But I was in seventh grade, so I didn't know if it was broken or not. But I saw that it was sticking out, mm-hmm. but it wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's usually an indication.
And did you run away saying, "Oh, it's disgusting"? You want it?
So I stayed with her, and then I called my mom.
You have an instinct, so that's good. You have the athletic training instinct, so it's really good. But like I said, when that leg was cut open, it was disgusting to some people, but to me, it was really cool because I wanted to use it. I may never see that again, but now I can learn. It just goes back to what we talked about earlier. Have you done this before? What are the concepts you have to understand? Okay, stop the bleeding, keep the patient calm, call 911. I mean, we could see his arteries and everything. It was just awesome from a student aspect. But some people, if you run away from that, this is the wrong profession for you, because people are going to come to you for help and you have to be able to treat that. And you would want it to think of it from your situation. You would want somebody to help you. Do you want to go and get injured and everybody runs away saying, "Oh, it's disgusting"? No. You want somebody to help you. And that's what athletic trainers do. And that's what you have to experience as a student, is you get that background so you can take care of them. You may have never seen it before, but you put the concepts together. What do I need to do to get this person the best possible care and probably get them to the ER? Same with a head injury. It's not gross. You don't even see anything, but you have to know what could possibly be going on and take care of them. So wound care is good to hear, because that's really something. It's fun. You get to make a difference there because you get to treat it. Anybody else have something they wish they could see more of?
Well, they are actually, I think, either just turned all their mics off because it's time. The bell's just about to ring. Oh, yeah, so
saved
so
by the
gonna...
bell.
All right, well, that will pretty much do it for this show. We're going to have to cut this one short again. This one's just about an hour. And Dr. Knobloch and Dr. Yellen, they love the profession of athletic training. They love talking. They love what we're doing here. And so Bill comes back in and we jump in there for a little bit over an hour and a half, and so we'll see once I get it finished, edited. But episode 84, Have I Succeeded, has become episode 84 and 85. So with two visits from Dr. Yellen and Dr. Knobloch, I have gotten 4 hours worth of content. So hopefully you can join us, listen to 84 part 2, also known as episode 85. So again, if you ever want to contact us, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the ways to contact me. Definitely choose to interact with us on Twitter using hashtag TheSMB, and you can get some questions. And you can see in the second part, we had a little bit of interaction so we could answer and ask those questions live online. So again, using hashtag TheSMB during the live show, or tweeting me or asking me your questions beforehand, or emailing me those questions beforehand, and we can ask those live on air. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the ways to connect with us. So for Jeremy, Sports Medicine One crew, that's a wrap.